Luke chapter 22 is where I'm going to begin this afternoon. Luke chapter 22. This will be very familiar ground. This is the night of Jesus' betrayal. Jesus has been arrested, has been taken to the high priest's home, which had a courtyard. Peter has been let into the courtyard by John, who had some connections with the household of the high priest. And Peter and some others are around the fire. It's night. Apparently there's a chill in the air. Starting in verse 55 of Luke chapter 22. Now when they had kindled a fire in the midst of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. And a certain servant girl, seeing him as he sat by the fire, looked intently at him and said, "This man was also with him." But he denied him, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." And after a little while, another saw him and said, "You also are of them." But Peter said, "Man, I am not." Then, after but an hour had passed, another confidently affirmed, saying, "Surely this fellow also was with him, for he is a Galilean." But Peter said, "Man, I do not know what you are saying." Immediately while he was still speaking, the rooster crowed. And the Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, "Before the rooster crows, you will deny me three times." So Peter went out and wept bitterly. Peter had said earlier that day, "I will not deny you. Even if all are made to stumble because of you, I will never be made to stumble. Lord, I will go with you both to prison and to death." And I believe he meant every word of those. I think it's possible that Peter not only meant those things, but he was ready to make good on them. Something changed that night, however, that Peter had not anticipated. When the soldiers came to arrest Jesus, what did Peter do? He pulled out his sword. Now, how many soldiers were there? Have you ever done the numbers? There were hundreds. Peter pulled out a sword and was ready to fight for his Lord against that mob. I believe Peter, when he made these statements, not only believed them at the time, he was ready to make good on them. But what did Jesus tell him when he pulled out that sword and cut off that man's ear? "Put your sword away." I think that may have been the moment of change for Peter. Peter had not yet fully comprehended what this kingdom was going to be about. And when the Lord told him, "This is not a kingdom that you're going to fight for," I think that was a game changer for him. He was apparently a very capable man physically. Have you ever thought about some of the things he did? He was a brave man. When they get to the tomb, John stays outside. He's a little slower to act. What's Peter do? Just runs right in. John was faster, but Peter was the one he's going to go. And then when after the resurrection, when they're out on the boat and Jesus is at the shore and he calls to them that morning, when Peter realizes it's Jesus who's at the shore, what does Peter do? And he swims all the way. I don't remember exactly what the numbers were. I don't know, 200-300 feet maybe. He swims from the boat all the way to shore, and then he's the one to drag the fish up on shore. I get the impression Peter was a very physically capable man. And he probably thought, "I will fight. That's my comfort zone." But when the Lord said, no, "Put your sword away," that's when he started losing a little faith in himself, which was a good thing. I take us to this moment, however, because Peter did something here he would never have guessed he would do. And when he was confronted with the fact that he had done it, just by simple eye contact, what did he do? He went and cried. And he didn't just cry, he wept bitterly. You know, I've cried a number of times. I cried yesterday while I was standing up here performing this ceremony, but I didn't cry bitterly. I've had moments where I've cried bitterly. Peter wept bitterly over what he had done. Have you ever, and I don't need any kind of visual response to this, but just in your own heart, have you ever wept bitterly over a failure on your part to stand for your Lord? And if you haven't, has there ever been a time that you probably should have? I was going through a directory of churches that I made about 10 years ago, of congregations that practice mutual edification and share our convictions in these United States. That list of churches, admittedly, was not very big 10 years ago. I have not finished going through the list. It is already 5 congregations shorter in 10 years. And there have been no additions. Now, are we the only ones doing the Lord's will? I'm not suggesting that in the least. I don't believe that. But just among those we know about already. One in Michigan, one in Illinois, one in Colorado, one in California. And I can't remember where the other state was right now. So across the nation. And there are frankly a number of other congregations within our fellowship that another 10 years, if the Lord tarries, it's going to keep going down. And it's caused me to step back and think about how I want to spend the remaining days of my life. We've had some church plantings here and there, and it's been good. And those congregations have done well. But how much effort are you and I, just as individuals, putting in to looking for opportunities to share the gospel or taking advantage of the ones that present themselves? Many years ago, this was written. Many of us have sat idly by and watched our co-workers, our communities, and our country happily trundle down the way that leads to destruction. We have watched our numbers plummet, false doctrine proliferate, and sin prevail, and made little to no earnest effort to pull the pendulum back. Those words were written 15 plus years ago, and I think they're just as true now as they were then. I'd like to begin the remainder of my thoughts by asking a question. And I want to make something clear before I ask the question. I am not interested in trying to make anyone into something they're not, as far as personality goes. Some of us are very comfortable walking up to a stranger. Some of us would rather have a root canal. I realize we're very different kinds of people. And the Lord made us that way. So this is a good and godly, this is a good thing to be different kinds of people. The evangelical world over the past 20, 30, 40 years, I don't know, has managed to kind of convince their membership that in order to be a vivid, vibrant Christian, you've got to become an extrovert. This is something that some have keenly felt. Oh, it's my job to get out and evangelize everybody, and to do that, I've got to be this kind of person. That's not what the Bible is teaching us at all. I don't think the Lord is expecting and requiring every one of us to be out talking to strangers all the time and knocking on doors all the time, etc., etc. At least, I don't think He's requiring that of anybody who hasn't accepted that work. But do we all have opportunities, at least now and then, where the door gets kind of opened by something someone said or asked, where we could, if we really wanted to, take advantage of it? I think we do, don't we? Surely. We do live in a society right now, 21st century America, where the soil has gotten awfully hard. That's true. But as you have seen in this congregation, when effort has been put forward to share the gospel, although the results have not been as numerous as we might love, there have been results. If you, or me, if any of us in this room right now is not making efforts to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with the lost when opportunity presents itself, if we are not at least looking for opportunities, what is the reason? Let me change the question a little bit. What are the reasons in general that we allow to discourage us from trying to share our faith with the lost? And I'm asking that to get an answer from you.
I think one is we don't like to be rejected, or
okay.
We don't like doors slammed in our face, or we don't like people to ridicule. And that happens.
It does, it does. Although, I mean, you've done a fair amount of door knocking in recent years. Ed, does it happen very often? No, it rarely happens. Yeah, it doesn't happen very often. I mean, and it happens a whole lot less here than it does in Colorado, I'll tell you that. That culture's past us. I get a lot more, if you want to believe in a fairy tale, in Colorado than I get in this area. You know what I have found? Canvassing in the community around Murray Road, if you ask people this question, I learned from Jeff Yost, and this has been really helpful. You don't even bother to tell people your name. They don't care who you are. At first, at least. So they open the door, and I just say, hey, we're out encouraging people to study their Bible. Are you a Bible believer? You know, a lot of people are. Oh, I'm not sure, whatever it is. Well, can I ask you a question? Sure. Do you think most people are going to heaven? What do you think is the most common answer to that question? Over in Lee Summit, that's not the case. You know what the most common answer is around the Murray Road church building? No! That's the answer I hear a lot. I don't think most people are going. Why don't you think most people are going? Well, they believe that God has standards. Now, they might not all be agreed on what those standards are, but they believe God has standards. And they're not buying that all these bad people are going to heaven. So there's hope here. There is a foundation to work with, I find. And it probably does depend on region and community and so forth. Okay, so one of the things that holds us back is we don't like ridicule. Amen to that. You know, you look at Hebrews 11 and it lists all the things, scourgings and all these things, and right in there with it is trials of mockings. Nobody likes to be made fun of. All right? Yes, sister.
Well, yesterday morning, somebody rapped on my door. I'm living alone now, and I don't like people rapping on my door if I don't know they're supposed to be rapping.
Understood.
And I go to the door, and I won't open the door, but this man is holding this sign up. Would you let me read the Bible? Or this Bible, something to you.
Yes.
And then I see he has a Bible to his chest. And you know what? That just, I mean, I've been in some church the entirety of my life. And I read the Bible myself. I don't need somebody to read it to me. But that really turned me off.
Hmm.
And not only that, but, you know, I just don't want to open my door.
Okay.
To people that I don't know.
Okay. And when we do a door knocking, we do encounter that. There's a lot of fear, understandably.
As a younger person, I have.
Sure.
Door to door. Myself, and most of the time, admittedly, by people that are just glad to have me there so they can have some money to go with.
Sometimes.
But when I lived my entire life serving God the best I know how, and then to have someone, you know, it sort of turns me off. So I think.
Interesting.
Now, I don't know whether I want to.
Interesting. Interesting. Okay. Interesting. I'm sure you're not alone in that. I'm sure you're not alone in that. I do want to touch on the fear thing, because that is a factor. And I'm not making this about door knocking. I only cited that. I'm just talking about normal, everyday situations. But we do have a fear factor. I've knocked on an awful lot of doors, and it was louder when you came to the door than it is after you knock. Because they all quiet down. They don't want you to know they're in the house. And, you know, that's just something we live with, and we move on. But just normal everyday thing. What keeps us from talking? What can keep us from talking more with people about the Lord than we could or should? So one thing is the alienation or the ridicule. Other things?
I think not knowing exactly how to handle.
Okay. Yeah, that's a big one. Not knowing how to go about it. We'll come back to that one. Did you have something, Paul? Apathy? I think we'd have to admit that's true. I think that's probably in the top three biggest problems in the American 21st century American church is apathy. Who needs heaven when I got it here? I've watched, there's a correlation, just back to door knocking for a moment. There is a noticeable correlation between how people will treat you at the door depending on how affluent the neighborhood is. It's unfortunate. And I'm not going to say every grade, but you get a neighborhood that's obviously much more affluent than another, and there's a noticeable difference in how people respond to you. So, Jesus warned us about that. Yes, Gaylene.
Why don't we go to the neighborhoods where we know the chances are bad?
Sure, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not discouraging it in any way, shape, or form. Yeah, choose your places and up your odds. Let's talk about, I want to touch kind of what on Paul said. We'll go through these and feel free to offer comments as we go along. But I think one of the things that would help us would be this right here. And I guess one more question. Is it my responsibility to share the gospel with someone if I'm given the opportunity? Okay. And how do we know that? Okay. 2 Corinthians 5.
If we become Christian, then we need to share that with other people because we're within the
kingdom of God. Yeah. What did Jesus say? He said, love your enemy. Love. What greater act of love could there be than to share the wonderful story of love? Somebody once said, if you're willing to go to heaven alone, you're probably not going. And just the idea is, if you're content to let other people go to hell, well, what kind of heart do you have? That's not a Christian heart. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. What Acts chapter 8, verse 4, when the church began to be persecuted so terribly in Jerusalem, the apostles stayed in Jerusalem, right? It says the apostles stayed in Jerusalem, but your run-of-the-mill average Joe brother and sister, they fled, and what did they do? They went everywhere preaching the gospel, it says. Preaching. And preaching, it just means proclaiming. That's something you can do across a kitchen table. That's something you can do across a counter at a convenience store. That's something that has nothing to do with this. This is just one version of it. Okay. Philippians chapter 1, verse 14, I think is another good verse for that. Paul's in prison. He says, most of the brethren have become more bold to speak the word of God. Most of the brethren. So this is something that the Christians do. Conviction. Can you convert an unconverted world with a half-converted church? You're going to have a hard time. Somebody once said, it's not that people aren't watching, it's that they are. And what they're seeing is not helping matters. A salesman has to believe in his product. Let me ask you these questions, and you answer them in your own heart. Do you truly believe the message of the cross and its promises? Now, I mean, really, do you believe it? Do you truly believe that there's only one body, one faith, and one baptism? Do you truly believe that these truths have made all the difference in your life? Church obviously is not a club. It's not something we do just because that's what mom and dad did. I was talking with somebody earlier today about reasons that young people get baptized at times. I saw this firsthand. My jaw about hit the floor. A sister came in she was conducting a little survey, and she sat in a youth meeting. I was not here. This has been 15 plus years ago. Group of young people in this living room there for a weekend Bible study, and she came in and she said, what were the things that prompted you to get baptized? Why did you get baptized? And one of the young men said, because my dad wanted me to. Okay. Church is not family. It's not about family. It's not about a club. It's not about just going through the motions. It's not about, this is what I was raised doing. It's about God has created a colony on earth with a direct connection to heaven. Our citizenship is in heaven. We sit in heavenly places. And when this world burns up, this colony will be drawn to the kingdom to which it's already connected. There's this thing called eternity that exists right now, although it exists outside of this physical realm. This physical realm is going to go. This is what it's about. Do you believe that this is ultimately what's most important? It is conviction that creates commitment. It is conviction that creates courage. Amber asked a man 20 plus years ago before we were married who is having some problems. It's always stuck in my head. She just simply asked him, "Who are you?" She asked it nicely, but she, "Who are you?" That's a good question. To look yourself in the mirror. Write down on a piece of paper, who am, honestly, on a document that no one else is ever going to see, who am I? Really? Am I the Lord's? Or am I somebody else's? Am I an obedient servant or am I something else? Choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve. No servant can serve two masters. There's something else I think would help. See suffering, mockery, etc., all that stuff through what I'm going to call, what the Bible calls. The Bible speaks about enlightenment in the Bible. Ephesians chapter 1, Hebrews chapter 6. When we come into Christ, the eyes of our understanding are enlightened. In other words, we begin to see things for what they really are. Philippians chapter 1, verse 29. For to you it has been granted on behalf of Christ not only to believe in Him, but to what? Anybody remember? It's not a verse we memorize too often. Philippians 1, 29. For to you it has been granted on behalf of Christ not only to believe in Him, but to suffer for His sake. You think, now if someone grants you something, this is generally good, right? Like we grant you an inheritance. I grant you that you don't have to pay that. I grant you that you're right. When we grant somebody something, this is a good thing. Paul says, it's been granted to you not only the gift of being able to believe in the Lord, but to suffer for Him. If you should suffer for righteousness' sake, said Peter, you are blessed. Rejoice, said Jesus, and be exceedingly glad, for great is your reward in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who before you. Any suffering I endure, what's that tell me? I'm getting what God's people always get. This is how they treated the prophets. They spoke well of the false prophets, Jesus said. You know, some of those names we've come encountering in the Bible, false prophets. Ah, it's a good guy. I like him. What did they say about Jeremiah? Oh. Ahab said of Micaiah, oh, he always speaks bad about me. We can expect to be spoken evil of. Criticism is confirmation. When people make fun of me for my faith, when people reject me for my faith, when people get angry with me for my faith, provided I have spoken the truth in love, all that is the world telling me that I'm one of God's. Because this is what God's people get. Brother, marvel not if the world hates you, said John. Don't be surprised. We should expect it. Yeah, but I don't like being treated that way, John. It hurts. Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me is a lie. So what's the solution there? Well, I think part of the solution is learning to care what God thinks more. I like the New King James. I'm not saying it's the translation to use. I don't even believe that. But I was struck as I was going through Galatians. This has been quite a number of years ago now. But in Galatians chapter 1, the way that King James and New King James words, verse 10, it stood... I came to understand it because I'd never understood it before. Paul says this, Galatians 1:10. For do I now persuade men or God? Or do I seek to please men? For if I still pleased men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. Now I got the please part. Do I seek to please men? Well, obviously that's not what we're supposed to be about. If I still pleased men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ. I get that. But he would start in verse 10. For do I now persuade men or God? What's he talking about? What do you mean persuade men or God? Persuade them, persuade God of what? Persuade men of what? Have you ever thought when you were younger maybe you were in school and here were the popular kids or here was someone of the opposite gender and you thought to yourself, I'd like them to like me. Did you ever have a moment like that? Surely we've had moments like that. I want this person to like me. So what did you do? Well, you altered the things you said, perhaps. You altered the things you did. For what purpose? to persuade them to like you. When Paul says, do I now persuade men or God? What he's asking is, who am I in the business of trying to convince to praise me? Am I trying to win God's praise, or am I trying to win the praise of men? Furthermore, who do you fear? We fear man so much because we fear God so little, somebody once said. Jesus sent the apostles out for the very first time all by themselves in Matthew 10:28. They'd always had him there to back them up. Something got difficult or something challenging came along. It appears he was kind of there to help things out. But for the first time, they're going to go out for them by themselves for a while. And what does Jesus say? Do not fear those who can kill the soul or kill the body, but rather fear him who can kill or destroy both soul and body in hell. Why does he tell them that? Because he knew that they were going to have times where they were afraid. And they were going to want to back out. They were going to want to get out of Dodge. They were going to say something that was a little easier, wouldn't make people upset. And he says, when you start feeling that way, remember. Remember. Remember the consequences of doing differently. Do you believe that God will call us to do something that he will not help us to do? We all know the answers to all these questions. So if right now I find that I don't have the foggiest idea how to go about talking to somebody about the gospel, and I don't really feel up to it, what should I do?
Pray.
That'd be the first place to begin. That's right. Is that all you should do?
No, you should prepare yourself to be a workman.
How would I do that, Ed?
Study the Bible.
Okay.
Pray.
Get with people who are
successful. That'd be a good place, yeah. I mean, all these are right, but these would go together. Absolutely. I'm going to ask myself, all right, this is what I want to do. If I want to learn how to do woodworking, I learn it from somebody. I mean, maybe I go get a book, or I get on YouTube or something. Well, if I want to learn how to talk with people about the Lord, I'm going to talk with somebody or learn it from somebody who knows how to do it. And that could be an evangelist, but it doesn't have to be. You've got people in this room who could help with that. Absolutely. So, I'm the king of unpleasant questions today. If I've been in the church 20, 30 years, 40 years, and I don't know how to talk with people about the Lord, what does that probably tell me about me?
Not a top on your list.
I apparently didn't want to do it.
Talk about our favorite recipes with our neighbor and the Chiefs game or the Royals or how to make the grass greener. And we weren't born knowing those things. But anyway, we're real comfortable doing that. And for me, I've kind of grown away from it, but I was all those things. Lack conviction. Had a duplicity of lifestyle. I was good here and bad in other places. And I wasn't a good workman. I didn't study my craft. And things like that. And, you know, those all. And then, you know, Satan's there saying, you've been such a loser all your life. And who are you? What kind of example are you? I mean, all those things work, but that's not coming from the Spirit of God.
Amen.
I believe the Spirit works through us. I can't tell you how, but, you know, sometimes the right thing to say just pops in my mind. I didn't study it. I never had thought it too much. But there it was.
Mm-hmm.
Experience and
yes, yes.
In the Word. I mean, sometimes those ideas and compassion. I mean, we live long enough. Haven't we been through just about everything? don't we know how to commiserate with people who are in a bad place? Don't we know the way out? Don't we know where true satisfaction comes from?
I hope we do.
Yeah.
I believe many of us do. Well, I appreciate all those things, and I agree with all that you said. I don't mean to be the guy that's just getting down on people at all. I've been that in the past. I try not to be that person anymore. But once in a while, at least I'll speak for myself, and I don't believe I'm alone. it does us good to not be told something that makes us feel good. The reality is, American Christians in general are lazy, content with the world, are not thinking of things eternal, and it shows. And it's had consequences. And it's having consequences. And if we care about our own souls, we'll change it. And if we care about other people's souls, we'll change it. So I'm not making a judgment about you as a congregation or you as individuals. I just see this as a general pervasive problem. Everywhere I go, I've seen it affect my own life. And I believe that with God, nothing will be impossible. Are you with me? You are of God, little children, and have overcome them, because greater is He that is in you than he that is in the world. As John Lee said many, many years ago, one man and God is a majority. One person and God is a majority. Two more things, real quick. You know what Paul said over in Romans 10? Romans 10, chapter 10, verse 1. He said, my heart's desire. You could put that right under the who am I question. What is my heart's desire? My heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they may be saved. Romans 9:3, I could wish that I myself were accursed from Christ for my brethren, my countrymen according to the flesh. What's Paul saying there? He's saying, I could. That's subjunctive in the Greek. In other words, if it were possible, it's not, but if it were possible, I would entertain the idea. In fact, I would act on it. What would Paul do? Yeah, I would condemn myself to hell to save my countrymen. I brought that up one day up at Excelsior Springs. I was teaching a men's class on evangelism. And does anybody in the room know Brother Tom Lindstrom? Okay. Tom, I don't know all of Tom's history, but he was not a member of the church. I think he came to the Lord late in life. And so he did not raise his son to be a follower of the Lord. And so Tom has offspring who are not Christians. Tom's up in his 60s. And we read this verse in Romans 9. And I said, you know, help us get a feel for what Paul is saying here. I said, who of us in this room, if it would save our children, if it would save our children, would give ourselves to hell to make sure our children would be saved? And Tom, I mean, it was one of these bursts of emotional. It wasn't something he had to think about. He was sitting right up kind of on the front row near to it, and he just looked down. He wasn't saying it, you know, for extravagance at all. He just said, in a minute, do we love people? I had to kind of face the music on that in my own life when I realized that I was just pretty self-centered. It's still a problem in my life. I admit. I'm getting better, but it's a place I need to grow at. I was the sixth of six children. There were 10 years between me and the youngest one. I was kind of a only child. I had all these siblings who'd bring me gifts. Life was all about me. When your life's all about you, you're not loving people to the degree you should. Where is your neighbor going to go if you get word today? What's going to become of your neighbor if you get back home today and knock on the door is, we just wanted to let you know that neighbor Emmalou, neighbor Bill, they died this morning. They had a heart attack in the living room. Funeral's going to be 2 or 3 days from now. Now, you were a member of the Lord's body. You knew the off-ramp. They were on a highway to hell, and you knew it. You knew that you were the off-ramp was, but you didn't do anything. How are you going to feel? Do you think about these things? Have you ever had one of those moments of clarity where you're among a whole bunch of people and just for a moment, you look at all these cars driving up and down this road. What's the population of Raytown right now? I can't remember what it was. 33,000? Lee Summits, I don't know, probably 100,000 or getting near to it now. Independence, 130,000. Kansas City, I don't know, 300,000 or 400,000. They've kind of been having an exodus. But all these people, every one of them is going to spend eternity somewhere. Every one of them. And you walk out and you see all these people. You ever had one of those moments and it just hits you? all these people. And they're just living their life. They have their reward. This is what they're going to get. This is it. And then what am I going to do about it? Do I care? I don't know the man's name. He apparently used to have a television show, maybe still does. Maybe some of you heard about the video or saw the video. Charles Fry is the one who made me aware of it. This man is an atheist. And he has some television show. It's a comedy show. And like those shows do, he has a live audience, apparently, at least during the recording. And after one of his shows, he did a little video on this. After one of these shows one day, one of the people who'd bought a seat to watch his show was standing off stage after the show was over, and I guess maybe he'll visit with, you know, people who come once in a while. And this man approached him and handed him a Bible. And the man just said, "I want you to know I enjoy your show, appreciate your humor or whatever." Said a few words about the Lord and handed him a Bible. And here's this man who's an atheist. Now, what do you expect his response to be? He's got a television show. He's an atheist. How's he going to feel? Well, we're not passing judgment according to appearance. That's good. This man in the video, he says, "You know, I don't believe this stuff. But for someone to believe that in my current condition, I'm going to spend eternity in hell, and to not tell me would be the worst hate of all." He respected what that man had done. That man believes his soul's in jeopardy, and out of love came and told him. If we love people, it will come through. Does this mean everyone you love is going to respond lovingly? Of course not. We know better than that. They didn't do it with the Lord. They're not going to do it with us. But the love will come through if we show it. Let's close with this. The Lord gives us all kinds of motivations. And among them is we will be rewarded for this. Somebody once said, if you rob a man of his dream, you rob him of his esteem. God's given us this dream here, and it's going to come, reality. And it's ours now if we're in Christ. But we need to retain what we've been given. 1 Corinthians 15:58, "Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord." Galatians 6:9, "Let us not grow weary in well-doing, for in due season we shall reap if we do not lose heart." Daniel chapter 12, verses 2 and 3, I won't turn to them, I won't read them, but it describes the resurrection. And it actually describes how, well, let's go ahead and read it. I hate to reference it and then not read it, I guess, under the circumstances. We'll close on this. Speaking of the resurrection, Daniel 12:2, "And many of those who sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, some to shame and everlasting contempt." This is the verse. "Those who are wise shall shine like the brightness of the firmament, and those who turn many to righteousness like the stars forever and ever." Did you see what he just did? He singled out those who turn people to the Lord. When the Lord describes the resurrection, he singles out those who are in the business of turning souls to righteousness. And it reads almost as if their bodies might even be a little different. I don't know. I don't know what this whole thing's going to be like from here. We're not all the same here. We don't all have the same responsibilities here. We know there's going to be responsibility in heaven. The Bible's very clear on that. And apparently we're going to receive responsibility there in harmony with how well we handled responsibility here. "You were faithful over a few things, I will make you ruler over many things. You did well here, I'll give you 5 cities. You did well here, I'll give you 6 cities. Luke 19. It's not all, we're all going to get heaven, but heaven is going to be experienced differently, apparently, based upon how we handle things here. Not levels of reward, but in that God has dealt to each a measure of faith here. Sounds like there'll be something similar there. He says what the wise body will be like, and then he says, and those who are like, who turn me to righteousness, there will be like this. I don't know. We'll find out. But whether that's right or not, the Lord cares about this. Those who turn their life in the direction of helping others turn to righteousness are noted by the Lord. This matters to God. Our Christian life is about living holy. It is about loving one another. But it is also about loving our neighbor, which cannot exclude their soul. So, I don't know if a lesson like this, I don't know what this does for our hearts. You know, I don't, and I'm not, what I mean by that is, I've talked along these lines for many years, and I've felt like in the past that the way I did it really wasn't the most effective way. And so it makes me wonder now, is this really the most effective way to talk about this? I don't know. I do know, though, if we love Jesus and if we love people, we will give some attention to their souls. So, I appreciate that word of encouragement. Let's stand and have our closing song, and if there's anyone who we can help now, we'd like to.